We're back on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish. I just figured out my Wake and Rake pick. And it's...
You gotta save it.
I gotta save it, but it's...
Give a little hint of the rationale, I guess. Because you're excited about this.
How do I say it without getting fired? No, it's just...
Spent quality time?
It's good. It's a very big narrative pick.
Scored the night before.
That's all you gotta know. Stay tuned.
That's it?
Well, I want people to tune in to the next block, Justin.
They will.
It's called the tease.
Okay, so, well, you're leaving them on the edge of their seat, I guess.
While we wait for Jeff Blair to connect, here's something to ponder and send it at the text line at 59559. The Northern Star Award, formerly the Lou Marsh Award.
Oh, I didn't realize they changed the name.
Neither did I.
Because they were looking for...
Now the Northern Star.
I thought they were looking for an athlete to name it after.
The Northern Star.
Oh,
it'll be awarded today to Canada's.
Like,
it'll be awarded today to Canada's Athlete of the Year. Any front runners? Do you have a pick? Think about it. 590, 590. We can talk about that during the Wake and Rake segment.
We'll have to take a look at that. Yeah.
I wonder if our next guest thinks it could be a Blue Jay. Our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Jeff Blair, Sportsnet.ca, columnist and co-host of Blair and Barker, and A Kick in the Grass. How's it going this morning?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. There's lots to go through. There's World Cup, there's baseball, and now there's the Northern Star Award. Is Jordan Romano going to win this?
Not a chance in hell.
All right.
He won something.
And I'm a voter. I'm a voter in it.
Okay.
I'm a voter,
Jeff.
In it.
Okay.
So, yeah, that, you know, no disrespect to Jordan, but yeah.
Okay.
Who do you like?
Yeah, you don't have to tip your hand, but is there like a short list you're considering for the award?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you start with the two names from hockey, right? In McDavid and Makar. I'm kind of interested, and there's always a healthy debate around this. I know there are people who are, you know, Brooke Henderson's name is obviously going to be out there, and I guess Felix, you know, will be out there as well for tennis. I'm kind of interested in, bad pun here, but doing maybe a little deeper dive when we have these discussions on Summer McIntosh, swimmer, who is... the third best female swimmer in the world right now at what was she, 15, 16?
Mm-hmm.
She's had a terrific year and she's been dominant. She's faced, you know, when you look at sort of depth of competition, again, I know that's a horrible pun, diving,
you're
swimming,
just killing
depth,
it this
but
morning.
It's not meant to be, but depth of competition, it's a really tough field right now. Women swimming, just in this country alone, is really tough. So it'll be an interesting discussion. I'm not entirely certain there's a front runner, as there have been in the past. I mean, you know, Oje Aliassime, good year, but his success, you know, the Davis Cup success is team success. How do you rate that compared to individual success? You know, it's amazing how in recent years hockey players, especially NHL players, really haven't, you know, it's funny. I would argue in some ways they've been underrepresented in the award, which is a good thing because, you know, we've had Damian Warner and Andre DeGrasse and Alphonso Davies. I mean, this is such a, you know, we're such a sporting nation now that we're really not just limited. We're really not just limited to one sport, but it'll be an interesting discussion. Everybody has their sports that they kind of plump for and their athletes that they, you know, that they talk up, and then the rest of us just kind of cast a vote. So it's going to be an interesting discussion this year.
Well, we're just treading water before we ask you about the Toronto Blue Jays. Ew, we're just swimming in the puns this morning. Okay, Jeff. So
very good.
Justin said at
keep
the
paddling.
Yeah, that's good. Justin said at the beginning of the show that it could be shaping off to be an off season of finishing second for the Toronto Blue Jays. I know it's early into winter meetings and such, but we're seeing some names that Blue Jays were, you know, in the running for second best runner up to. Are you feeling like they might be coming a little bit second place to some of these?
I mean, I don't know. When does spring training start? I mean, there are going to be moves made up to spring training. The winter meetings aren't kind of the, they're not the showcase they used to be. I mean, the biggest event at the winter meetings now is generally Scott Boras's sort of state of the game address. Andrew Heaney, does he move the needle for you? I would just love this team. You know what I'd like the Jays to do? I'd like the Jays not to give Pete Walker any more projects. Like, give the man a break.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, Andrew Heaney is, I don't want to necessarily say he's a project, but this is a team that sunk a lot of money into Yusei Kikuchi last year. I think you got to do better than Andrew Heaney. And in terms of finishing second, what's second? You know, if a guy doesn't sign with you, it doesn't matter whether you were second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. I mean, the San Diego Padres finished second to Trey Turner, and they offered him the most money. So, I think what happens is people sometimes conflate a team having an interest in a player and talking to the agent as meaning that, boy, they're all in on him. And I haven't seen anybody fall off the board right now. Cody Bellinger would have been interesting. I can see why Cody Bellinger decided to take a one-year contract in Chicago, where he'll probably accidentally hit 35 home runs, get to play in a nice grass field, doesn't have to worry about playing in the National League West ballparks. You know, if he'd come to Toronto, he would have had to play in the East against tougher teams, all that stuff. So I really haven't seen anybody fall off the board where I've gone, oh, well, that's a body blow for the Blue Jays. Justin Verlander would have been interesting. I don't know how they would have made it fit under the payroll. I think this team's biggest move this offseason is still going to be via trade. I thought that going into the winter, and I still think that will be the case.
Do they go that route with getting the Teoscar Hernandez replacement? I wonder what you think the best way to go about filling that hole is, whether it is making that trade, whether it's Brian Reynolds, Lars Nootbaar, someone else, or spending on a costly free agent. I guess when you consider this, it's like, what do you need to preserve more, the limited prospects you do have or the flexible and spendable dollars, of which you may not have that much of at this point?
Yeah, I mean, based on what you're hearing as far as the packages being offered for Brian Reynolds. And let's be clear, Pittsburgh doesn't have to trade him. The Jays would essentially be emptying their farm system plus Gabriel Moreno to get him. Would Brian Reynolds make them better? Yeah. Would he give them a better chance of winning this year? Obviously. I think this team needs to add a left-hand hitting outfielder. That's what you'll place Teoscar Hernandez with. I still think Brandon Nemo's a guy on the on the radar for him. But even if they do get him, they're still going to make a significant trade using one of their catchers, I think. And they've also got other pieces that can move. Santiago Espinal is a name that's come up. This is a team that needs to add at least, in addition to a center fielder, to a left-hand hitting outfielder, they need another left-handed bat off the bench. They need more pitching. So I can see them maybe making their big move, getting a sort of a younger, controllable pitcher. There's a clear fit between them and the St. Louis Cardinals. There's a clear fit between them and the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then if they can't sign Brandon Nemo, I can see them pivoting and maybe bringing in a couple of left-handed bats, maybe bringing in a Michael Conforto and bringing in a Michael Brantley, one of the two of them, or I can't imagine they bring both of them in. But that's kind of the way I see this going. But Brandon Nemo is the only free agent that I'm really, 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 really interested in right now if I'm the Blue Jays. But every time a free agent signs in Toronto, there's still a premium to playing in Canada. That premium is at least one extra year. So do you want to give Brandon Nemo 6 years, 5 years? I don't know.
What makes him the most attractive to you right now when you look at an addition for the Blue Jays? Because we've been saying his name for now a couple weeks as well. But what is it that makes him at the top of your list?
I mean, it's the most logical fit in terms of where you could put him in the lineup, his handedness. Probably not the greatest defensive center fielder you're going to run into, but that is a question for a team that is going to focus on run prevention. I'm just a big believer that you have to move George Springer to right field, and in order to do that, you've got to have somebody competent to play center field. And I think Brandon Nemo is could very well be that guy. I just think this team needs to add a little more balance. I mean, they've gotten rid of most of their left-handed hitters. They didn't bring back Raimel Tapia, which kind of surprised me a bit. I can understand that there's, you know, probably some pressure in them when it comes to the 40-man roster and that. It wouldn't surprise me if they double back and maybe try to bring him in on a lower contract if no one else is that interested in him. But that's, you know, they've been pretty open about what they want to do this year, right? And that is add more pitching, which everybody does, and give themselves the platoon advantage more often later in the game. And I think if you look at players out there, I mean, the lefty hitters out there that, you know, we're not talking about a trade here, we're talking about free agents, are guys like Nemo and Conforto.
Mm-hmm. So the Blue Jays have been openly discussing that they have had some conversations about the catching situation. They have that surplus, and obviously there hasn't been too much movement in terms of players moving for catchers yet. But if you're making a decision and maybe you haven't yet, which one you'd be, you know, more willing to part with? I know we've talked about this with you in the past, but have you moved at all in your opinion on if the Jays were to get rid of a catcher, who that would be?
Yeah, if I want to get something in return, I would think the two guys you'd look at, if I want to get something substantial in return, I should say, I think the two guys you'd be looking at are Kirk and Moreno, because they're, you know, they don't have as much service time as Danny Jansen. Kirk's probably a better, no, he's not probably, but Kirk's a better offensive option for you if you were looking for that. And of course, with the DH in play in both the National League and the American League, now that factors into it as well. If you want to get Alejandro Kirk's bat in the lineup every day, it's not that much of an issue. Moreno is a guy, you know, he's still considered a prospect. There are a lot of teams, and I know, you know, I got flamed on social media for this last year when I said it at the trade deadline, but, I know there are scouts out there, and I know there are teams out there, and Ross Atkins talked about this. They look at Gabriel Moreno as a guy who is probably, you know, may end up not being behind the plate in a couple of years down the road. If he develops as a hitter, maybe you put him at third base. Very much like a guy like Michael Barrett was when he first came up, a guy that everybody thought was going to be a terrific catcher, and a guy who ended up catching and playing third base at different points in his career. So I think because in terms of what will bring you the maximum return, I would think Kirk and Moreno would be a little ahead of Jansen. And you know, I'd be okay with either one of them moving, frankly.
Should the Blue Jays be operating under the assumption that they will have the same Jose Berríos next year as they did this past year?
I don't think you can. I think you almost have to. You almost have to assume he's going to be better. I don't. You know, if what we saw last year is what you're going to get, that's a real issue. Everybody you talk to around the team thinks they have an idea about what was going on with Jose Berríos. It's interesting, if you go back and look at some of the comments he made himself during spring training, he never really felt right, and I don't know whether that's, you know, had anything to do with the lockout. I can't imagine. His comments early in spring training and towards the end of spring training were that he didn't feel right. And for whatever the reason, his whole year was just wobbly almost from the get-go. I mean, I have a lot of faith in the guy. Everybody you talk to has a lot of faith in the guy. He's healthy, which is the biggest concern with pitchers. I expect a bounce-back year from him. But, you know, I don't know what you do if you're the Jays to protect that. I don't think you can do anything. The only thing I think you have sort of in your hip pocket is maybe the hope that a guy like Ricky Tiedemann comes up and helps you at some point in 2023. But for a team that already lost Ross Stripling, doesn't know what the hell to do with Yusei Kikuchi, you know, there's only so much bandwidth, right? You can only address so many issues. And if you really focus in on getting insurance for Jose Berríos, I mean, I think you're just going to tie yourself up in knots.
Am I right in assuming that, just as you mentioned, Ricky Tiedemann, that you value keeping him higher than Orvaz Martinez because he is a homegrown pitcher that the Blue Jays are going to need, whereas Martinez, and they're 1 and 2, I think, in the prospect ranking right now. If you had an option to keep one of them, it would be Tiedemann in a trade?
I wouldn't give up Tiedemann.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I would trade Aurelvis Martinez. I'd trade Gabriel Moreno before mm-hmm. I'd trade Tiedemann. You know, Aurelvis Martinez, I mean, you know, what is he right now? Where does he profile in this team? If I'm the Jays, at some point early next year, I'm sitting down with Matt Chapman and I'm having a conversation about extending him. And if that's the case, there's your third base hole filled. You know, I think Bo Bichette, well, let's wait and see what this offseason brings for Bo Bichette. But if he's a factor, you know, there goes shortstop. I mean, where else are you going to play him?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I don't know. To me, there's a little too much. There are too many questions around Aurelvis Martinez offensively right now for me to really, you know, to really go all in on him. And I think when you look at the prospects that were moved at the last trade deadline, like I think we have to be careful here. We fall in love with our prospects because there's an entire subculture devoted to talking about guys, you know, that people see once or twice a year. You know, people are already in love. I don't know. I have never seen Ricky Tiedemann pitch. I don't know why I like him. You know why I like him? Everybody tells me he's good, right? but I mean, seriously, that there's a whole bunch of people who probably haven't spent a great deal of time really looking at these guys or thinking about these guys. They fall in love with them. And I go back to the trade deadline, and you know, Barker and I have talked about this. I just don't think other teams value the Blue Jays prospects as much as the Blue Jays value them. I really don't. I look at the prospects that are moved, that have been moved in other deals. I look at their numbers. I look at the Jays prospects numbers, and I go, ah, man, there's a bit of a difference here, right? And then you read the, you know, the write ups on those other the other prospects. I think sometimes we fall in love too much with the Jays minor leaguers.
Before we move to a more MLB-wide look, we haven't got a chance to talk to you about the addition of Don Mattingly to the roster, to Blue Jays staff here. I'm sure you have followed and you know him maybe personally, maybe just from your experience in the industry, but how he fits with Schneider and how he's going to, you know, work in a tandem with a guy that he has a lot more experience with.
I think he's, first of all, everything everybody says about Don Mattingly is, you know, I remember Don Mattingly as a player. I've mm-hmm. talked to him as a manager. One of the things about Don Mattingly, if you look at him, if you've seen him in the dugout, you never get the sense the moment's too big for him. And I think that what the Jays realized last year, or this past year, I should say, is, you know, there is a place on a staff for a guy who's been there and done it. You know, yeah, the analytics are great. It's great that we've got, you know, 15 hitting coaches and all that. There's something to be said for having a guy who was a borderline Hall of Famer who probably went 0 for 20 at one point in his career, right? Having that guy in the dugout so a guy like Bo Bichette can go up and talk to him, so a guy like Vladdy can go up and talk to him. I mean, one of the things people around the team will tell you is that they really missed having Dante Bichette around last year. Well, now you've got a guy like Don Mattingly who not only has that reputation as a great hitter, but he also, as a manager, has had a reputation. I mean, you look at the Marlins. He worked with a lot of young pitchers. He brought a lot of young pitchers through. Pretty much everywhere he's been, he's had to deal with different situations. The Dodgers, he was dealing with high-salaried young players. He was dealing with high-salaried older players. So this whole this compilation of on-field and in-dugout major league experience is something the Jays just didn't have. They didn't have that guy who has been in big moments, who's had to make a decision in big moments, who's had to come to the plate in big moments. And I think he'll kind of dovetail very nicely with this coaching staff. And I found it interesting that shortly after he was hired, one of the first players to reach out to him was Bo Bichette. And I think you're going to see that as opposed to being kind of someone who's going to gum up the works, you know, because the Jays last year had three hitting coaches. Now they've got a bench coach who's a better hitter maybe than just about anybody in the organization. You know, you're sitting there saying, okay, that's four voices that guys are going to be hearing when it comes to hitting. But I think Don Mattingly's smart enough to realize that his role is more of an advisory role. And I think he is smart enough to realize that a lot of what goes on is going to have to be initiated by the players. It's going to have to be the players coming to Don Mattingly. But I think it was a good hire. I think it's something that staff really needed. And that's no disrespect to anybody in the mm-hmm. staff, but they needed somebody who's been in those big moments and somebody who can maybe say to John Schneider, you know, maybe we ought to think about doing this. You know, maybe we need Jackie Bradley in there right now and get George out because he's hurting. I mean, there are a lot of ways you can look back at that game, but I really do think having somebody who's been there and done it would be a real asset to this team.
Jeff, sorry to give you a curveball here, but John Morosi, friend of the show, just tweeted out moments ago that Aaron Judge, sources say, is in agreement with the Yankees. Breaking news for you this morning, where you, if that's the case, and I know it's not Arson Judge, it's Aaron Judge this time around. Is this what you predicted all along?
No.
Oh, okay. So a little surprised. No.
I thought he was going to go to the San Francisco Giants all along. You know, I wasn't even necessarily thinking of the money. I thought that you got the sense at the end of the postseason that Aaron Judge and the Yankees, it just felt as if something had happened and, you know, somebody was ready to move on. But, I thought it was going to, I know some people were talking about possibly the Cubs, the Dodgers. I thought it was going to come down to one of two teams. And, I thought that Aaron Judge would probably end up going to San Francisco because it's close to home. We'll wait and see what the dollar figures are here. I'd be shocked if it was any team other than the Yankees. Mm-hmm. I guess would be the best way I'd put it. It's because it certainly seems as if one point yesterday, and I know people have been having a lot of fun with John Heyman's tweet, but the sense you were getting from other reporters at the winter meetings, people like Susan Slusser, who are really, really, really wired into the Giants, the sense you were getting is that the Giants were very, very comfortable and very confident in signing Aaron Judge. I mean, they put a full court press on him over Thanksgiving. They had just about everybody in the organization talk to him. They really went out of their way to sell him on it. But I'm sure Yankees fans are breathing a sigh of relief this morning. And who knows? Maybe they won't boo him now.
Yeah.
Danielle notes, our producer, that it's going to be 9 years, $360 million, according to Ken Rosenthal. So, of course, we expected it to be big. It is whopping disappointment for the San Francisco Giants. Maybe
yeah,
a little
40, $40 million a year. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That is pretty good. And to get 40 over 9 is even better. Disappointment for the Blue Jays, maybe a little bit, though. It would have been nice, I guess, to see him out of the AL East if you're looking to win division titles over the next 9 years. So I guess we'll ask the question, does this affect the Blue Jays in any way? Can they react to this in any way? Can they change their ideas in any way? It's, you know, just going about your business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Blue Jays are like everybody else. They probably thought he was either going to the Yankees or the Giants. But, I mean, it has no impact on what they do, I wouldn't think. You're right. It would have been great if you're a Jays fan or if you're the Blue Jays to see Aaron Judge out of the division. Although, having said that, I kind of enjoyed seeing Aaron Judge play. I'm actually kind of,
yeah.
You know, as a fan, as someone who likes going to games, sitting there and just kind of enjoying the moment. I kind of like having Aaron in the division.
And some solace in that the Yankees don't spend like they normally do, and $40 million means that aging team stays just about the same, maybe. I don't know if they'll be able to improve as much because they just had to pay their own guy, and we'll see if it affects their roster construction.
That's a long, long contract.
That is a long contract.
For a guy that age.
That is a long contract. So maybe something to look forward to in the future, a declining Aaron Judge, but for now, we'll relish in the current Aaron Judge and enjoy watching him from afar. Another thing we're enjoying watching from afar is the World Cup. I want to talk to you about this a little bit before we let you go. You were on Morocco way before anyone else. Why was that, first of all? And I guess, does Canada's loss age a little bit better? I mean, the only team to it was an own goal, but the only team so far to score on Morocco.
Yeah, no. I think Canada's World Cup was still a disappointment.
I tried.
We get third place.
You know, people are saying, well, they had two teams come out of there. Chances were pretty good there were going to be two teams coming out of that group anyhow, getting this far. So, no, to me, it doesn't change anything. You know, Morocco, first of all, we always underestimate teams that come out of Africa. Their qualifying is a bear. I mean, it is unbelievably difficult to qualify out of Africa, and I think as a result of that, sometimes I don't think we give these teams enough credit. The other thing about the Moroccan team is they've got two phenomenal players. In Hakimi and Ziyech. I mean, they just are. They are world class players. One playing at PSG, the other should be playing at Chelsea. I have no idea what's going on there. And they're just resolute, right? It's a weird story. You know, their coach has been with them for what, 6 months, I think. He's really highly regarded. They've just got this nice blend of youth and experience, and they know how to play tournament football. They know how to get tougher as the tournament goes on. And you see this a lot in the World Cup. You see teams grow into a tournament, and the really good teams do that. I mean, we're even seeing it with Argentina. They're just kind of growing into the tournament. You can see, as you watch them, there's a greater sense of confidence and all that stuff that goes on. There's a real dynamic to being a good tournament team in soccer. And I think I just looked at the start, and I thought, man, Morocco just looks like that type of team. You know, they're tough. They've got a lot of veterans. This is going to be their last kick at the cat. They've got good young players, some of whom haven't probably played Ziyech as much as they thought they would for their domestic teams. And it was a really nice balance. And, you know, I looked at that group. I just didn't think Belgium was going to be that good. Croatia is Croatia, but they were old. And I thought, man, if there's a team that could kind of sneak in here, it would be Morocco. So I don't know where this goes from here. Portugal looks awfully good. And I think they may have figured something out about themselves yesterday when it comes to Ronaldo. But it's fun. It's fun having. World soccer is always better when there are good teams from the African continent in. It just is. They add a lot to the tournament. They add a lot of flair. Their fans are great, and I just think it's kind of a cool story. But I mean, the bottom line for me is they're just so tough. They're just so tough, and they just do not panic. I mean, you know, they were under siege for the better part of that game, and the number of clearances they made where it was very controlled. There wasn't any panic. You know, the ball was directed in the right way. You didn't see them heading balls that close to their goal or anything. They really seem to have that sense of defensive identity. And again, and the penalties were, I mean, the penalties were just brilliant. Yep. That's a master class in how you take penalties. And every now and then your goaltender has horseshoes up his ass, and it helps as well.
Tough and a great game plan, at least so far throughout this tournament, doing what they did to Spain and really smothering Alphonso Davies, who has been playing at a position, I guess, for Canada this entire time. And I think with so much conversation around Davies, and I want to ask you about this, because the last conversation we really had on Canada was with Christian Jack, who just talked at the end of our segment with him about Davies' insistence in playing up front and that being far different than what, you know, the position he plays at Bayern Munich, and how that decision and how that line of thinking sort of had repercussions, right? Like, it kept Jonathan David out of the starting 11 in the third and final game. And I wonder if there's anything to nitpick with Davies, because they were trying to nitpick him there over there in Qatar. Everyone over here is defending him, and I get all of this conversation. But if there's anything to nitpick, it's like, how can Canada be at its best if he wants to play a position that he's not naturally fit for?
Yeah, part of the problem is, you know, and John Herdman's had this issue before, right? When Christine Sinclair was, you know, one of the most dominant female players in the world, and you kind of had everything revolved around her, right? And that just, that sometimes that happens naturally when you're just, when you're better than everybody else, you are going to be the focal point. Look, I thought that this World Cup was all about preparing for 2026. I still think all the stuff that happened with Alphonso Davies, you know, where he played, you're right, you know, his desire to sort of be the guy. I think that was a good learning experience for Alphonso Davies. Like, I was only half kidding when I said the most important thing to happen for Canada in this tournament was that Alphonso Davies got his goal after missing the penalty kick.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I mean, he is going to be hugely important in 2026, obviously. It, you know, the problem I think Canada has, and I don't know if it's necessarily a problem, Canada's got a lot of depth and a lot of talent on the outside, on the wings. It's got, I mean, we've talked about, you look at the Canadian team, guys like Tejon Buchanan. I mean, there's a lot of depth in terms of their wide players. And I think, you know, if you're John Herdman, I think your whole idea is, how do I, it's not necessarily how do I get my best 11 out there every time. It's how do I get my best 10 besides Alphonso Davies out there all the time.
Right.
And I think you almost have to, by default, structure everything around Davies. And I don't think that's ever going to change. And you know, I think you're seeing the way world football is going now. I think you're going to see more and more of that. You're going to see guys playing out of position more and more. You're going to see, you know, guys who are strikers. You're going to see them dropping deeper. You've seen with Harry Kane, sort of your classic striker. Well, Harry Kane is dropping a little deeper and getting involved almost as a facilitator for England as much as a finisher. This happens all the time in soccer. And I just didn't read a lot into Alphonso Davies' tournament one way or another. Like, I think it was a good tournament for him. Again, taking the penalty kick, that will always, I'll look back on that and I'm not going to say that's where Canada lost their group, if you want, but that move really kind of rattled me, because it made me wonder how mature we were, that team was as a club, and whether or not there still wasn't a bit of naivety to it, because you don't have to have your best player take penalties, right? Chelsea has Jorginho take penalties. You don't have to have your most talented offensive player, your superstar player, take penalties.
Right.
That's not how it works. It isn't. You've got guys who are really good at that. And generally, a guy like Jonathan David, who's done it at a top league, you know, he's got to be your guy there. He just does. But the fact that he didn't take the ball, the fact that he acquiesced to Davies, I think, was that kind of got me thinking that, okay, this is... Even if this doesn't work out, there might be a lesson here, right? You know, Christine Sinclair, and I keep bringing it back to Christine Sinclair. Christine Sinclair, towards the end of her career, and it's still going on, I guess. I shouldn't make it sound like it's over. She didn't take penalties. If you think back to that, Christine Sinclair started to cede penalty responsibilities to other players on the Canadian women's team because she just wasn't that comfortable doing it. It wasn't her strength. And the Canadian program needs to get to that stage, I think, where guys understand what they can and can't do, and they're okay with dealing with the stuff they can't do. And again, I think 2026, we're going to see all of these experiences come to the fore. And I really do think in 2026, at some point, we're going to be looking back at that missed penalty, and we're going to be saying, you know what, that was a lesson for everybody.
Yeah, it seemed like a results over process decision, and I hope in 2026 it's process, and then you get some results. Quickly, because I know we got to let you go here, I want you to contextualize England-France for us this weekend, the big game, the last game. Like, how many Super Bowls equate to England-France quarterfinal World Cup?
I mean, I don't even know how you'd begin to explain it. Anytime you talk about soccer, you're talking about countries that have fought wars against each other. You know, I always bring it back to that. You know, like,
not so long ago either. It's crazy.
Boy, Yankees Red Sox. That's a real rivalry. I don't know. I don't remember the state of New York invading, you know, the state of Massachusetts. And you know, the thing is, England is so good, and so much of our sort of soccer dialogue in this country tends to focus on England because of the Premier League. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, I listen to Talk Sport in the BBC, and they're still not convinced Gareth Southgate's the man, you know. I still can't believe that he didn't start Marcus Rashford and all this. The one thing I will say about this English team, I think the England team is deeper than France. I just don't know if they can handle Kylian Mbappe. I know they have Kyle Walker, who's going to match up against him on the outside. But if you watch the last couple of French matches, Kylian Mbappe, everybody focuses on Kylian Mbappe on the outside. The number of times he cut in and his quickness in cutting in essentially takes the focus away from, you know, a guy like Kyle Walker, and it's going to put it on John Stones and Harry Maguire, you know, England's central defenders. That is their big weakness. And that's why I think that at the end of the day, as deep as England is, as good as they are, and they are a very resolute defensive team, I just don't think they have anybody as good as Kylian Mbappe. And I think this may be a match where the team with the best player in the pitch wins it. I think it's gonna be close. I would not at all be surprised if it's 1-0. I'll tell you what, it's got added time written all over it as well. But it's gonna be an unmissable match.
Mbappe, the odds-on favorite for both the golden boot and golden ball. I can't put those words together, but we tried. This was fun, Blair. We kept you long. We appreciate that.
No worries.
You can catch
Thanks,
a
guys.
New episode of Blair and Barker this week. John Schneider joins the show from the winter meetings in San Diego. We look forward to that. Thanks again, Blair.
See you. Take care.
This Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
You're shook, eh?
I'm just so excited that he mentioned England being so good, because I need England to
you
win the
sure
World
do.
Cup to avoid building a snowman. I'm pretty much resigned to the fact that I will be having to build said snowman in the future.
Before we take a break, first time we had significant breaking news on our show, so congratulations to us. Handled it quite well. It wasn't the dream that I had.
Isn't that for someone else to decide? We handled it well.
It wasn't the dream that I had that Aaron Judge signed with the Blue Jays, but this is real. It did happen. Aaron Judge reportedly going back to the Yankees, 9 years, $360 million.
No fake check marks.
Real.
Great stuff.
Check marks. The real name. Apparently, earlier this year, we know that he turned down an offer that would have been a low ball. He's now added $143 million by betting on himself.
Pretty impressive.
That's pretty good.
I don't know if the same is going to apply to a guy like Lamar Jackson, but it can work.
$143
million.
Might just
work a little bit more effectively in baseball, and I guess after setting single-season home run marks, that'll get that $143 million added to the end of the line.
If you want to bet on yourselves, you can bet with us on the Wake and Rake. Send in your anchor submissions. You have 5 minutes. We're going to take a break, and we're going to do the Wake and Rake next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money.
With Ailish and Justin.
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, speaking of money, Aaron Judge taking home the bag. Reported by our buddy John Morosi. Congrats to him. He got it right. He got it accurate.
Yeah,
spelled everything correctly.
Underrated storyline. Our guy getting
our
it?
Guy?
Our guy winning the offseason.
He's the winner. Indications are that Aaron Judge turned down higher offers elsewhere because he wanted to remain a Yankee. That's huge. He's staying with a chunk of change, reportedly $360 million, 9 years. The rest of his career with the New York Yankees. That's your breaking news for the day. Got you fired up to make maybe $360 million in the Wake and Rake. Maybe $360, maybe $3.60.
Play within your limits.
Whatever works for you. We should try to find a way to put like 3 and 6 and zero. No, it's too much work.
What? Oh, based on his contract. Okay, sorry.
No World Cup bets today.
Shambles brain there. Bet
shambles
for a second.
In the brain. No World Cup bets today, so we have a chance to actually win the Wake and Rake. That was good.
You also got 1 out of 29 points you needed yesterday from Anthony Davis. Just as a reminder.
I didn't give him
one
the flu.
1 of 29.
I didn't give him the bad shrimp cocktail ring that Joey Chestnut was crushing.
Let's not give up on the World Cup just yet, though. Let's just look at the futures odds board for a second, see if anything that we might like based on outrights as we head into the quarterfinals. The favorites, odds on favorites, massive favorites remain Brazil at plus 175. Second, France,
Brazil.
plus 400. Then the next shortest odds belong to Argentina, England, and Portugal at plus 600. Netherlands, plus 1400. Morocco, sleeping on the Moroccans, plus 2800. And Croatia at plus 3,300. They'll face Brazil in the quarterfinals. If I'm doing anything here, it's Portugal. We've already upset some Portuguese
fans. We need
fans.
To only
now
be a Portuguese
I'm going to pander
show at this point.
To Portuguese fans.
Because I think there's parts of the city we cannot travel to today.
potentially. Again, just laying out the facts that this was a pretty ballsy move on the part of their manager, sitting Cristiano Ronaldo. Anyway, if Ronaldo remains sidelined, even if he gets into the lineup, I think they turned a little corner here. It's not all about Cristiano. You can win without Cristiano. You can win 6-1 with Ronaldo spending the vast majority of his time on the bench. Portugal's got the easiest path. They got Morocco in the quarterfinal. Then they'll get either France or England. I think there's a good chance you'll be holding a plus 600 with Portugal in the final of the World Cup, and you can handle that or treat that as you wish with a plus 600. I think if there's any team to bet on right now, it's Portugal. You could convince me that the Netherlands at plus 1,400 is a decent bet as well.
That's my team too, so we're good.
But I'm not going to do that.
All right.
Portugal plus 600 is my bet on the outright World Cup if you want to do anything before the quarterfinals begin.
Okay, we don't have too much time, so give me your Wake and Rake pick. I'll throw mine in there, and then we'll pick an anchor, and we'll get out of here.
Okay, forced to go elsewhere. I got to go back to hockey. And I've been circling this Buffalo Sabres-Columbus Blue Jackets game. Columbus traveling second half of a back-to-back. They're the worst team in the league. You can fact-check that if you like. Just, you know, in my mind, worst team, Eastern Conference. They're at the bottom of the barrel. Buffalo's not really that much better, but they are better. And they've been waiting for Columbus in Columbus. Couple things I like. I like the money line. I like the over. These two teams play almost exclusively overs, especially Buffalo. But I'm going to get aggressive. Buffalo on the puck line, -1.5, plus 167. If we're not going to win these with regularity, let's win a good one when we win them. Plus 167 will spruce it up a bit. And Buffalo, when they win, they score a bunch of goals. Big Tage Thompson night. Big night for that first line. I think they put up a big number in Columbus, and they cover the puck line at 1.5.
Say big again.
No.
All right, I like that. Puck line for the Buffalo Sabres, similar line of thinking, which we're not going to put in the anchor, but Jagan Scarborough says, my Wake and Rake pick is Tage Thompson over shots. He's hit the last two games. Love that. But
could we? Are we? Is that?
Let's pick something else.
Okay.
I like that, though. All right, so for my Wake and Rake submission, I just need to play a clip quickly to justify why I am selecting this individual to have a good game. Here's Giannis on the podium 2 nights ago.
I don't know if my lady have anything planned for me. I hope they have something planned for me. Maybe like a birthday cake, maybe like a birthday card or maybe like a birthday watch or maybe a jewelry. I would love that. I don't know if my family is watching right now. They should go get them. I will not want to go to dinner because I have a game the next day. I want to be able to rest and get my treatment that I usually do and take my nap and play with my kids. After once I put my kids to bed, you never know what can happen, you know? Might get a little bit freaky. No. It's my birthday.
Okay, it was Giannis's birthday. He's spending love time.
Spending love time? That's one way to put it.
I meant to say spending time.
No, he spent love time. And if he scored the night early, scored the night before, Justin scores in this game. That's the justification,
ooh,
right?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Spending love time
with his loved ones.
Oh, behave.
I'm picking Giannis over points, assists, and rebounds tonight against Light the Beam. I feel bad, but
wow,
I love it. I want to watch this game for many reasons. Giannis over points, assists, and rebounds, 48.5. He's gone over it for the last, like, five games. And he's got a little pep in his step tonight. Happy belated birthday. Okay, let's pick an anchor
pick. Or he might be a little drained.
Justin.
What, physically?
Okay, let's read some...
Okay, we only have about 3 minutes, so let's go with three texts. We got Matt in Toronto. Not to toot my own horn, but I did call Matt Murray shutout last night.
Did.
So, you know, toot toot. If we only paired that with a Shane Wright goal, we'd be multimillionaires.
Yeah, I tried.
I'm an Ottawa fan, but I can't help but be happy for him doing well. Maybe our suffering will be your golden egg. Just be careful. It's quite fragile. Get out your pens, pencils, write it down in the fog of your windows if you must. The real moneymaker tonight is Boston minus 1.5 puck line. The Avs are out of players. There's no one left. The Water Boys on their third line tonight. Easy money, Matt in Toronto. So Boston on the puck line, one of the considerations. Would you like me to continue as you regroup?
I'm good now.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. Tonight my Wake and Rake pick will come from Wednesday night's hockey game on Sportsnet. Wild versus Flames. I'm going with Kaprizov over 3.5 shots. That's Corey in Port Hope.
Just another reason to keep it locked on Sportsnet. I could go with that.
Yeah, I like
pick.
That. He's a company man. And then Parlay Poppy. Parlay Poppy wants to shout out Ron and Markham. Ron from Markham and Juliana. I got love for my entire 5-9 family. We win or lose together. I love this. We all love the show, and it's clearly become a staple in all of our lives. With that being said, I'm sorry, Justin. Denver losing by one is definitely a bad beat. I will do better. As for curating my taxes, some are done the night before, some are done the morning of, but they're always drafted in notes first. I personally care about sending in winners and also making sure everyone laughs with one-liners. Today's anchor is the Boston Bruins on the puck line. No McKinnon or Landeskog, just Kale McCarr against a healthy Bruins squad. Bruins about to have kale salad for dinner. I'm going to start my McCarr.
I love it.
And we said text, not taxes, my bad.
We've got two in for the Bruins on the puck
should
line, which
that,
means
then?
That's pretty much... The decision is made for us, but also it's going to be a juicy parlay. I like this a lot. We've got two puck line additions with Boston and Buffalo.
Let's
plus
do it.
Giannis after an eventful night with a lot of whatever it was, spending love time with his family.
Shut up.
Whatever it is, it bodes well for future success. So
okay.
What does that parlay yield us, Irish Forfar?
Okay. Plus 1225.
Oh.
The juiciest of Wake and Rakes. Really pumping it in there.
I love it.
I wish us all the best of luck in our Wake and Rake. Giannis over points, assists, rebounds, Sabres and Bruins on the puck line tonight. Your Raptors face off against the Lakers in a star-studded night at Scotiabank Arena at 7:30 p.m. Aaron Judge bringing home a big old bag of money. Hopefully that's you as well with our Wake and Rake submissions. We'll be back tomorrow, Baby Friday, when the Toronto Maple Leafs are back at home. Mitch Marner trying to go for 21. Got Thursday night football as well. Thanks for listening this morning. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.